You're listening to the Round Table Podcast, episode 23. Hello, literary alchemists. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to the Round Table Podcast.
Each week on the Round Table Podcast, we invite writers to come on the show and pitch their story ideas to Dave and I and our esteemed guest host.
And then we, we tear into it with our claws?
That's right.
Right.
Talons.
Okay. Talons. See, I'm trying to wrap my head around the inner demon that
pitch
is within
riddled.
Us all. Yes. I'm just going to say we lay it gently upon the table and address it courteously and try and lure it like Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady to becoming the exalted creature. No?
No, stop lying to our listeners. They know us way better than that.
Ultimately, we strive for, say it with me, Brian,
literary gold.
Yes.
Now, hopefully there's not like a delay.
Oh, no. And I will fix it in post, baby. I always fix it in post.
Oh, yes.
So now, granted, we're recording this thing many weeks before it actually goes up. But, dude, you're on fire.
Oh, you have no idea.
Hopefully by the time this thing airs, it's over. But, friends, here's a glimpse into the past.
It's pretty crazy. Colorado, we've got the High Park fire, which has burned over 200 homes at this point.
Oh, Jesus.
Another
now,
fire.
You're safe, right? Greeley's not going to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
how are
no,
your folks?
Fine.
Are
like,
your folks
we're
okay?
We're sucking in smoke.
Well,
but,
yeah.
But other than that, we're okay. And, it's all the fires are either to the west of us or to the south of us. But you got the one, you had the High Park and it was burning out of control and over 1,600 firefighters there. And then all of a sudden a fire starts down near Colorado Springs and, they make this decision that fire, even though it's much smaller, is much more important. Because it's burning right near NORAD and they shut down part of the Air Force base and started evacuating Air Force people.
And, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So just crazy, crazy fire, and some of the pictures are just amazingly horrific. Yeah. It looks like hell has come to Earth.
Well, and by the
time
or
we're being attacked by aliens or something, it's nuts.
By the time this show airs, hopefully,
yes, hopefully.
That tragedy has been put to rest. And any of our fans in the Colorado area, or as we recently learned, in the Utah area, I hope you've endured whatever you had to endure with grace, and you come out of it on the other side stronger than you were before. So
absolutely.
Yeah. But, God, see, now I feel bad about going for this segue. But speaking of being on fire...
Oh, that's horrible.
That is bad. Ooh. See, and all again, right. Hopefully enough distance has passed that it's over and
right.
People can say, oh, Dave, ha, 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 that was a bad segue rather than coming at me with pitchforks. But
that's right. And if you lost your house in the fire, contact me and I will give you Dave's home address.
Yes, thank you. Awesome. See, this is just burgeoning into weirdness. So let's try and extract this from the weird zone and introduce our guest host. Dear friends, you heard him just a few days ago on the 20 Minutes With, author of the John Cleaver series, I Am Not a Serial Killer, Mr. Monster, and I Don't Want to Kill You. His latest book, The Hollow City, came out July 3rd. Hopefully you've all been enjoying that. And purveyor of dark and sinister delights of many sizes, scopes, and skeins. Dear friends, welcome back to the roundtable, Mr. Dan Wells. Dan, thanks for returning and taking that big chair at the table, my friend.
Oh, it's very kind of you. Actually, if you don't mind, I'm not going to take the chair. I'm going to take the beanbag chair so I can lie down.
Oh, Brian, did you bring in a beanbag chair into the roundtable, man?
You know, I didn't know that's what that was.
You assumed it was sort of some sort of pseudopodonous mass.
Right. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
It
was sticky and all, but
yeah. Lumpy.
Yes, right. And if only appropriate, Dan, that you should take that seat. So by all means.
I had surgery last week. I had my tailbone removed, and
oh.
So I can't really sit down.
Oh, geez. Then, oh, man. Some anti-grav devices would be awesome then at this point, as
yes.
Long as we're rocking this.
Baron Harkonnen's chair. Do you have that one?
There you go. Oh, there's a vision. There's a vision. Dan, other than emerging from surgery and being better than you were, what's coming up? I know you've got cons that you're going to. You've got more literary gold that you're putting out on the shelves. Let our listeners know what's coming up for you.
Well, as you discussed, I just had a book come out, The Hollow City, which is another psychological supernatural thriller, you know, in the same genre as the John Cleaver books, but unrelated to them.
Okay.
And that one is really fun and really kind of mind-trippy weird, so I hope everyone likes that. Normally, this time of year is when I have a ton of conventions. That's we've got coming up in a couple of weeks, Worldcon, which is where they do Hugo Awards, and we're nominated again for Writing Excuses this year, so we hope we do well there.
Awesome.
Dragon Con's coming up. Gen Con is coming up. There's lots of stuff, and I'm not going to be at any of it.
Oh, God.
Because as of, what is today, August 7th? As of about a week and a half ago, I live now in Germany. I moved to Germany.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah.
Es ist besser aus Krankheit. Whatever that
so
means.
So I am missing a lot of the normal conventions that I do, but I will be back. I'm going to a conference in Vegas in November. And if you live in Europe, I'll be all over the place here.
I was going to say, there's a whole raft of European cons that are now open to you.
Yeah, so and I don't have a lot of them locked down yet. I know I'm going to Forum Fantastico in Portugal in November and some others. But, yeah, so we're going to be here in Germany for about a year and a half.
Okay. Is this just because you like Sauerbraten, or is there a deeper thing
this
beneath
is
this?
Because we can. And my wife and I are very adventurous, and we figured, you know, when else are we going to have a chance to just pack up and live in Europe for a year? So we're doing it.
God, what an awesome experience for your kids, too.
Yeah. We're excited. We hope that they learn the language.
Very cool. Well, friends, do send Dan a postcard, and don't be alarmed if it doesn't get there right away, because it's traveling across the big pond to get to you. That sounds...
Now, and I also have, I forgot this. But I do have another book coming out at the end of this month.
Please.
It's not a full-size book. It is a novella, and it's e-only. But it is part of the partials sequence that I'm writing, the YA science fiction. It's kind of a medical military thriller. And the first one's Partials, came out in the spring. The next one is called Fragments and comes out next spring. But we have a novella called Isolation that comes out at the end of this month. That is, you know, kind of the backstory of one of the characters.
Outstanding.
And so that one is it was incredibly fun to write, and I'm very excited for that to come out and people to see it.
And available at all the usual E outlets?
That's absolutely right.
Fabulous. We'll make sure that gets into the liner notes. So friends, if you're a Partials fan, you don't have to wait till next spring to get some Dan Wells goodness. You can catch, what's it called again?
Isolation.
Isolation. Available in ebook. Outstanding. Well done, sir. Do you audio fiction any of your books? Do you podcast any of your books?
Well, they all have audio versions.
Okay.
I'm not involved with their creation in any way. But for this one, because it's an ebook and because I'll be in Europe, I'm thinking of doing, and I'm still working out the details, but I'm thinking of doing some kind of online book launch chat.
Ooh.
Thingy, which I think will be fun. So we'll see if we can work that out.
That would be excellent. Yeah. And do keep us in the loop. We'll give shouts out on the website and to the fans if and when that happens. That's outstanding.
I definitely will.
Cool. The world is good if you're Dan Wells. All right. This is excellent. Let's take a brief pause, gentlemen, for a promotional break for a worthy podcast or exceptional audiobook or ebook or a regular novel. Who knows what the promo is going to be, because we certainly don't. But stay tuned. It's going to be awesome. And when we come back, we'll workshop a story. Sound good?
Sweet.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Friends, stay tuned. Right. We'll be right back. It was raining in Tinseltown. A hard rain that washed the trash into the gutters. And some of that trash talks. Sings like a canary if you lay down enough cabbage, or shove a Roscoe in his gob. Benny the Goose was a small-time grifter fresh out of the caboose after doing a three-spot for bracing the wrong mark. I slapped a sawbuck in his mitts and made sure he saw I was healed before I asked him, "Where is it?" Benny wasn't a sap, and my reputation as Big Charlie's button man gave me a whole lot of pull on this side of town. He spilled like a round-bottomed jug. It took some legwork and a few rounds of hot lead, but eventually I glommed what I was looking for. A letter that every high pillow in L.A. had his torpedoes out looking for. I could foist it for some serious berries. But before I did, I figured I should read it. "For adventure from a bygone era," the letter read, "tune in to Protecting Project Pulp, a weekly podcast of classic pulp tales guaranteed to get your pulse pounding. You can tune into the thrills of Protecting Project Pulp starting Tuesday, July 17th. Visit their website at www.protectingprojectpulp.com for more information. Protecting Project Pulp, where adventure truly begins."
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Damn, the mics are hot tonight.
Woo!
To go with the whole fire metaphor.
Work it.
Hopefully the fires in Colorado have burned out, but let's not let this one die out. So why don't we roll into the workshop proper and bring our guest on, who I'm sure is chomping at the bit. That's a mixed metaphor for you.
That was. Wow. Indeed. Horses. Horses on fire.
Horses on fire. Yeah. That sounds like a Pokemon thing.
It's a good visual.
Right.
But
fire tail, fire at the feet, beast of hell. I like it.
Yeah, well, of course you do. That's where you live.
All right. Dave, introduce our guest writer.
It would be my singular pleasure to do so. Our guest writer tonight is another one of those artistic Swiss Army knives. He not only writes, but is also a musician and a digital artist, 3D no less, so which is beyond awesome. He has two stories up on Amazon right now, My Last Day and A Second Chance. He's also active in the podosphere, where he's known as Dan Dan the Art Man. You can catch his podcasts and a veritable cornucopia of his audio fiction at his website, www.dandantheartman.com. Please welcome to the Skype line our brave guest writer for this episode, Dan Absalonson. Dan, thank you so much, man, for stepping up and offering a story for the show. We really appreciate it.
Hey, it's an absolute honor to be here. I'm really excited.
Yeah, so are we. And just because, friends, we've actually worked this out. From this point forward, our guest writer will be called The Art Man, or Art Man for short, because there's no way we're going to have two Dans on the show and spend 20 minutes going, who, me? Who what? Me? No. Okay.
That would be so much editing work.
That would be. And that's, we ain't going to fix that in post. So, Art Man, how did you get into writing, dude?
Just always loved reading. I've loved writing too. I wrote a lot in elementary school, but once I was married and had children, I didn't really have as much free time. And so I thought, instead of being in bands and having practice all the time, I could write whenever there happens to be free time. So I'll just pour my creativity into that. I'd already started writing, but just really getting serious in the last few years. But I've always wanted to be a writer. I've just kind of been in the back burner until recently. So
excellent. And you've got a full blown novel out at in beta readers' hands right now, right?
I do. I have a young adult kind of science fiction adventure story, and I'm really excited. I've written four novels, but this is the first one that's seen more than a first draft. So put it through three drafts, and now I've handed it off, and I'm really excited to get some feedback and do another draft or two and then publish it.
Fabulous.
It's fabulous.
We wish you every success with that.
Absolutely.
But for the moment, you've got a different story that you brought with you, yes?
I do, yes.
Excellent. Then let's dig into that. Like all of our guest writers, Dan, we're going to give you 5 to 8 minutes. Give us the title, genre, and format. Introduce us to some of the characters. Give us some of the key signposts, basic plot structure, story structure. In as far as you've got, a partial idea is perfectly fine. And let us know what we're going to be discussing tonight. So the mic, sir, is all yours.
All right. Thank you. Well, I've only written about the first paragraph, so I'm really excited to develop it. I do have a lot of it in mind, the ending and such, but the novel is titled The Truth About Zombies, And it's an apocalyptic near-future sci-fi thriller, I would say. Here's the hook line. Only a shy wimp knows the zombies are actually robots, and that humans aren't being held in emptied prisons for protection, but for some other reason.
Awesome.
And then the first line that I wrote, I just thought it would kind of be helpful. The first line is, I learned the truth about zombies when I shot off one of their scalps with my shotgun and saw gears tumble out. So the theme I thought would be pretty much that human life should be valued and fought for, and also about the protagonist becoming a man and, you know, kind of getting out of your comfort zone to help other people. And I hadn't really thought about the theme until just preparing for the show, but I think that's what it's going to be, kind of a coming-of-age story. So the world that this novel takes place in is the near future of our world, where robots are advanced enough to take over many things, such as our military, and they're taking over. They want to take over the world with the lie that a zombie apocalypse has come upon humans, and that they should all be taken to safe locations for protection from these zombies. And soon all of the humans are going to be held in prisons that were emptied out from these robots just laying waste to the prisoners inside so they'd have places to keep the humans because they want to keep the humans safe and they feel like this is the best way to do it. So I'll go to the characters. The protagonist is Ron Stamps. He is kind of antisocial, high school dropout. He works nights at a shady gas station. He's in his late 20s, but he's still living in his parents' basement. He just kind of hasn't gotten on with life. And I wanted his character arc to be that by the end, he's become a hero who has helped save everyone that's around him by convincing him that they're in worse danger inside of this prison than outside of it where everyone thinks zombies are. Then his kind of a sidekick character is Ernie Talon. He's ex-military, kind of an anti-robot guy, especially once they took over the military. That really peeved him. And he actually was previously incarcerated where they are being held. So he will be able to help guide Ron Stamps later on in the story to try and find a way out. And then I really need to challenge myself with everything I've written before. There's really not much of a romance story. So I thought up a name of Valerie Kite. He's about the same age as the protagonist, Ron Stamps. Possibly just has gone through something very traumatic, and so is kind of shut down emotionally. And maybe Ron can find a way to open her back up again and give her a reason to want to live again because she falls in love with him. And he convinces her, you know, we need to get out of here. You can't just be shut down and stay here. And then, you know, secondary characters like fellow hostages that are being held for their safety in this prison. So that takes care of that, and I'll move on to the story, which I have prepared in the Dan Wells 7-point system.
Good for you!
Yes. It's really helped me kind of shape stories that I can't quite finish or can't figure out why they're, you know, stuck. So I love it. So I'll start with the hook, and I put that Ron is a shy wimp. He lives alone and works a dead-end job. Plot turn one, where you introduce the conflict. He meets a guy who used to be incarcerated in the prison, who's Ernie, and they become friends, and Ernie rants about how he saw the robot apocalypse coming once they replaced the army, and he's surprised that the zombies beat them to it. Pinch number one is people are selected randomly and taken away, supposedly because they show signs of the zombie plague, and they never return. Robots have decided that the best way to make sure nothing ever happens to humans is to just kill them all. No humans equals no human suffering. The midpoint is where we learn that this ex-con knows a way to escape the prison, and he shows this to our protagonist, and they discover a pit of dead bodies outside, and the hero learns that the robots are planning to kill people. And this midpoint is where you should go from reaction to action, and he's shy. He doesn't want to try and convince strangers that, you know, they're not really zombies, they're robots, we should get out of here. But now he knows the truth. There is no zombie plague, and he decides he does need to start trying to tell people so they can escape. Pinch number two is the hero tries to convince others that they're all on death row, pretty much, and no one believes him. And he gets shunned by everyone, and I was thinking maybe even his ex-con friend. Plot turn two, we're rounding the corner here. Breaks free alone, but doesn't want to leave without anyone else. And he decides to come back and convince his friend that they need to make an escape plan. And so the resolution is that Ron ends up leading people into hiding away from this prison to escape the robot uprising. And he has a girlfriend. So he's not a loser anymore. That's kind of his character arc. And the last thing I was going to say is I was possibly planning this to be a trilogy. This would be book one, where what I just described. Book two might be called The Remnant, where the humans are surviving away from civilization, away from where robots who need energy can get to them. And then book three, start the revolution to destroy the robots and, you know, start humans taking the world back.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Cool. And Dan, what are you hoping to get out of this specific conversation that we're about to have? Or I'm sorry, Art Man.
Art Man.
No, help me God.
Well, I guess as you can see, I have what I think would be good ideas for where the story should go, but I have yet to write it, and I would love if you guys had ideas or if you saw obvious things that are problems. Throw me to the wolves so I can have a great story on the other side.
We don't house wolves here, Art Man. But
okay. Rottweilers.
Yes, Rottweilers, exactly. Excellent, excellent. I think we can definitely find something to send Absolutely. You out of here with some gold in your pocket. Brian, hit them with our disclaimers so that we're all on the up and up here.
Anything and everything that we, being Dave, myself, or Mr. Dan Wells, has to say during the course of this conversation can be complete and total bullshit, which means that you have absolutely every right as the writer to throw out anything and everything that we say and take only the things that you think will enrich your personal story.
Bam!
All right.
Awesome. Okay. So we always defer the opening comments, questions, and points of clarification to our guest host. So, Dan Wells, initial reactions to Art Man's story ideas, points of clarification, questions that you want to ask. Kick us off here, sir.
Okay. This sounds like a very cool story. I like the hook for it. The zombies are actually robots. The cool first line, all of that thing. I'm concerned about some of the logistics of it. Right. At least superficially, it seems to me that this is one of those evil plans that is so expensive and convoluted that it would be easier to just, you know, shoot people than to build giant robots that are actually zombies. And I don't know. So what I would like you to do is tell me who the ultimate bad guys are here and exactly what their plan is. And, you know, this is like long-term, if this is a trilogy, end-of-the-trilogy kind of stuff. What is actually really going on here?
Right. Well, I was pretty much thinking that maybe the government has put zombies robots into power, and robots are starting to think for themselves, and kind of the whole robot uprising thing where they want to take over and
so we're looking at a robot apocalypse. You know, we have created intelligent artificial life and it inevitably has risen up to destroy us.
And they were hard-coded to not, to protect humans. But, you know, I don't know how I think it's kind of weak, but kind of what I came up with was that they think if they're just all gone, none of them will ever be being harmed again. But yeah, like as far as the bad guy, I have a bad time with coming up with a antagonist sometimes. And
you have come to the right place.
Yeah. Yes, Brian. Yes. because, you know, right now my protagonist is pretty much the collective hive mind of robots, and that they've decided to wipe out the humans, and but, you know, there's some weakness
which
there.
Is,
so.
Which is, might be all that you need. Okay. I mean, as a zombie story, and you can look at The Matrix in terms of robot apocalypse. They did eventually, you know, there's a couple of people that they used to give a face to the bad guys, but for the most part it was just robots that want to kill people. So tell me then, at what point in the process here does it become necessary for the robots to carry out their plan to pretend to be zombies? Or am I misunderstanding this?
Well, I just initially, I didn't want to write another zombie movie, zombie novel, and so I thought, how could you do zombies, but then flip it on the reader that they're not zombies, so that, they're shambling robots.
The robots aren't actually, like, disguising themselves as zombies to trick us, or they are?
Yeah, they were built to look as if they were robots, and I was thinking, slowly, people were kind of replacing people that they deemed as bad who would harm other humans. They'd kill them, take them away, replace them with a robot that looks like a human, but then it would become so that it looks like a zombie. And so the main character at the very beginning sees his neighbor shambling in, and he's seen on the news, if you see someone shambling like that, they're a zombie. And so I guess I do kind of have it in my mind that maybe some person is behind this, that this whole conspiracy to get all of the people into these prisons.
Okay. Is this worldwide or is this nation?
I was thinking about that today. I think I was going to just start with the United States.
Okay. So we have a plan in which the robots, either acting on their own or with one particular person at the head, have decided to start actually replacing people, and they can fake us pretty well, but not perfectly, which is why we think they're zombies. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you know, on the news, it's been told these are zombies, and part of it too was so that if people are scared and fleeing their homes from zombies, then these good robots that everyone knows are like issued from the government to protect you. That hey, let me take you to this safe place. While we kill these zombies, you will come willingly here. And so I don't know why they wouldn't just go massacre everyone instead. Initially, they just wanted to put them all in there.
So we've got a weak plot point there that needs shoring up.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Anything else, Dan?
I'm thinking. Okay. I'm wrapping my head around this. You guys should ask some questions first.
Yeah, yeah. Brian, what about you for first impressions?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the first thing I think, and you just mentioned it, was that suddenly you're wanting the robots to be like, oh, if we kill off all of the humans, then there's no human suffering. And I love that, but I think it needs to come in late. I think there needs to be a sequence, and that the robots, you know, originally, and another thing that you can do is if you're concerned about like nationally versus world or whatever, they were built for a specific military purpose. So there had to have been some kind of massive multinational war, and maybe now we're cut off in some way from the rest of the world, and so now you have it localized, right? But then you have the robots, some collective mind saying, we need to protect the humans, and the first step in that is emptying out the prisons, right? Or getting rid of all of the bad people. And in the process of that, something happens. Maybe they lose control of a few of the robots or whatever. And then they say, okay, well, that didn't, you know, it's not working the way that we want it to. So we have to go a step further. And so, you know, what if we scare everybody into hiding, clear the cities, tell them that we've got these places set up that are sanctuaries for humans, and you know, and there's this zombie apocalypse, and so it's this grand scheme that the robots come up with. They design new robots with the skins of the bad people that they killed over the, you know, however you want to do it, because then it would start to decay and stuff, you know. And then as they're getting more and more people into these prisons, and they're seeing that that humanity has a way of, you get rid of the bad, and there's some, what is the saying about a void that...
Nature abhors a vacuum?
Yeah, there you go. Nature abhors a vacuum. And so there's going to be new people stepping up and becoming bad, and the robots start to see this and go, you know what, the only way to truly get rid of human suffering is to just kill them all. And so one by one, as the communication gets around, these prisons start being totally annihilated. And, you know, then mm-hmm. it's a series, and within these decisions that are being made, your main character is experiencing these as they happen, as opposed to, you know, he comes in right after all of the decisions have been made, because then there'd be no reason for the zombie robots anymore. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's just kind of a directional thing, I think, that would – a sequence of control. They need that control and then loss of control.
It also introduces an opportunity for Dan to explore, you know, some commentary on the human condition.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, as things break down, as culture breaks down, I mean, we've had several fictional works claim that once the illusion of civility breaks down, that humanity will devolve into savagery. Right. And this, you know, that what you're describing there, Brian, is a very cool thing that Dan, if you so choose, could mm-hmm. use as a vehicle, because you've got this. I guess I kind of subverted your opening comments. Do you have any more opening comments before I rant on?
No. Go.
Okay. Yeah. I love your protag. I love Ron Stamps. Antisocial gas station, lives with his parents. As you were describing this, T. Morris introduced the concept of the elevator pitch during a past episode, and mm-hmm. where like something meets something else. And for this, I kind of see Clerks meets iRobot. And, you know, having Ron Stamps be that cast off, that marginalized person who has given up, as so many people have, in terms of taking control of their life and defining their destiny, is a perfect foundation for that. So if you choose to go with Brian's perspective and comment on things breaking down in the nature of humanity, then having Ron as the protagonist and allowing him to go through those same progressions of breakdown of civility, descent mm-hmm. into savagery, and then something, whether it's Valerie and love or just a point that it's reached where he says no more and I will become a man, I will become a human and seize my destiny, and then mm-hmm. bam, away you go. That gives it a nice arc. Yeah. I love AI. I love the concept of artificial intelligence, and I think you can go a lot deeper into that, and I have some ideas mm-hmm. about that we can talk about later. One thing that really concerns me mm-hmm. is the fact that your book is titled The Truth About Zombies, and there are no zombies.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That if
very
you're
open to other titles.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering... Yeah, I don't know.
That's true, you know. I want another zombie book. I'll download this cool ebook, and then there's no zombies.
Big disappointment. Exactly. I understand the desire to turn the zombie paradigm on its ear and create something new, but I'm not sure. This is a robot story. This is not a zombie story.
Yes.
So at least as you've laid it out here. So I'm going to suggest the possibility of maybe putting that aside.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
And investing in the robotic element. Yeah. And I also really like the idea of keeping this national instead of global.
Yeah.
Because at some point, one thing that's consistent in all AI scenarios is that moment of genesis
mm-hmm.
when the central network or whatever becomes self-aware. And that moment, I think, is something you might want to consider as an author, when and how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did it take for the robot to decide, I need to take over? And what was that thought process? And once that thing launches, once the I'm taking over takes effect, if, you know, because it started in the U.S., you know, it starts to reach out globally, and all the firewalls shut down. and only America is affected because it understands the global network, whatever. You can come up with any number of reasons why America is completely inundated, and for some reason the world isn't. All of their firewalls shut down, and all communication, network communication, computer communication from the United States is shut off, which would create a very tense global environment.
Right? Oh, yeah.
So now you've got, and this could be, you know, instead of zombies, maybe it's the world is going to attack America, and nobody knows why. Right. The reason why is because we haven't figured it out. Robots have taken over. Holy crap. And evolve from there. So that's the first thought that came out. I've got others, but I don't want to hog the mic. Dan, have the gears churned a little bit for you, sir?
Yeah, I don't know. I keep going back to this grand evil scheme and trying to find the how to make it plausible. And I think, you know, one of the, like you were just talking about, making this national rather than global makes it much more believable. And actually, the more I think about it, the more I think that reducing the scope even more than that, if it becomes one state or even one city, then it becomes much easier for me to buy. Because one of the very first things that you have going on here is that the robots, for whatever reason, are replacing people. And I think that that's very cool. Dave is absolutely right about this being a robot story rather than a zombie story, but I don't want to lose that zombie aspect because I think that's what is so interesting, at least to me, about this idea. And, you know, this is one of the problems with everything I write is that it changes genre halfway through and you just have to hope that the readers are ready to go along with you. But I love that idea that you presented of, you know, the robots have decided to replace people. And maybe that's their whole goal is, you know, we can't control humans. We can't keep humans safe because they're inherently self-destructive. And so their plan has kind of become, well, we can keep them much safer if we can just turn them into us.
Right.
And so, you know, you start, your neighbor starts acting really weird and very conformist. This could be a classic 80s kind of paranoia story all of a sudden if, you know, everyone becomes incredibly robotic and we don't understand why. And so you have that. And if it happens on a small scale, if our AI that went nuts is, you know, just in, you know, one city and is just starting to cherry pick people and, you know, one by one replacing them, then I can believe that they actually have the resources. Because if this is even nationwide, then, you know, that's millions and hundreds of millions of people.
Yeah.
And if they have the resources to replace 100 million people with robots, then they could do this a lot simpler than they are.
Definitely.
Right.
You see what I mean?
You know, you could take that a step further, and then the prison doesn't become a place to protect them originally. It becomes their manufacturing facility.
Yeah, their transformation zone.
Yeah, where they bring the human in or a bunch of them in. And as you said, I love the idea that they're sort of randomly selected, but I think it's not at all random, but it seems that way to your protagonist. And that, you know, maybe at first it's, you know, a drug dealer here or, you know, a little old lady that lives down the street and is, you know, has trouble getting to her own mailbox. And just the people who sort of start to kind of disappear in the night and then they're back, but they're different. And that's what he kind of gloms onto so that when he's taken, then it's sort of revealed to him. But, you know, and maybe the very first effort was simply we're taking their skin and putting it on our robotic frames and the skin is decaying and that's what creates your zombies. But that was a first effort. And then later they you know, it becomes expertly executed, so to speak. You know, there's almost kind of a Cylon feel to this.
There's a Cylon feel. There's a Cybermen feel from Doctor Who.
No, yeah, yeah, and so you got Doctor Who, you got you know, Battlestar Galactica. You got a lot of, and but it's not what what's nice about it is that you're taking it in a totally different direction.
Exactly. So, exactly.
You know, what I love is the your antagonist can be the robot or the collective, but the idea that they are wanting to almost evolve and mm-hmm. become us, and that's their driving force, and how they don't understand us, and that's a very you know, very kind of Cylon thing, and that's one of the to me one of the greatest things about Battlestar Galactica is the idea that these machines want to be human, mm-hmm. You know, some of them do, but they just don't understand it, and they're still looking at it from their own perspective,
right?
And so they just are fucking up left and right,
right?
And that's what I see going on here is they're screwing up. They don't understand what they're doing, and they have no empathy. You know, because they're machines. So,
what were you going to say, Dan?
First of all, I don't want to take this too far, you know, from what you originally presented to us and make it our story instead of your story. And okay. It seems like one of the things that you were really excited about, most of your story, took place in and around that prison as a safe sanctuary, allegedly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it... I like what Brian said earlier about having this be a step-by-step process.
Right.
Because as initially presented, the robots have like four different plans all going at once. And I think that if you spread those out, you know, if mm-hmm. this starts as, well, let's replace people, mm-hmm. and then that plan doesn't really work because they're still figuring out how to do it. And then, you know, step two of the plan can be, you know, humans freak out and think that these are zombies, and the robots go, oh, well, how about we protect you by putting you in this, you know, the safest place we can find, which is mm-hmm. the place designed to be impenetrable, which is the prison. And so they mm-hmm. end up there, and then the robots kind of realize, okay, now we've got them all in one place. This went better than we could have planned. We could do anything with them now. Where you get all of that kind of authoritarian paranoia that you described in your plot synopsis of here we are in the prison. You know, the main character thinks that it's actually a prison. Everyone else thinks that they're being protected, and he knows this truth and is trying to convince them. And I mm-hmm. think you could still have all of that take place by, you know, just kind of spreading it out as the robot's plan evolves over time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like that idea. One thing that might just be a horrible idea, but sparked to my head was, what if there's the antagonist is kind of like a Steve Jobs kind of guy who wants to make everyone at first just comfortable, so he keeps making all these cool new robots that are like household robots or whatever, but he's just a very smart inventor, and he's inventing these robots to help make people more comfortable, but then maybe as he gets older, he starts to go a little crazy or something happens and he gets really depressed and thinks, you know, either, hey, my robots are better than humans, they're perfect, the world is just full of suffering, it should be full of my robots, or, I don't know, something
along
that way.
No, I think you're onto something there.
I want to make a suggestion. This is changing some of the premise of your story, but mm-hmm. Consider for a moment that this replacement process is not actually robots, but is somehow just cybernetic.
Okay.
And so it is something that we can implant in the brain of a person to make them more malleable and more controllable. Mm-hmm. And so your neighbor who's causing trouble and railing against the system or whatever, we can replace portions of him and make mm-hmm. him, you know, very inhuman and alien without having to go through all the cost of, you know, building an entire robot. And that it could right. actually, you know, give you a real live zombie apocalypse when the time right. comes, because they are human beings who have been rendered brainless through some mm-hmm. malfunctioning technology, or more horrifically perhaps a functioning technology.
Well, mm-hmm. and let me take that and go a step further with it. The initial rebellion or the initial plot is hatched by these purely mechanical creatures, these robots. There's nothing biological about them, you know, positronic brain or whatever. And yes, exactly. They find a way to subvert and integrate the human conscious, the human brain, through cybernetics, where you have now a neural network that fuses the biological and the mechanical. And as they keep doing that, the networking and the processing and the capabilities of these cybernetic humans, because it's accessing and utilizing brain function rather than just the hard-coded cyber circuitry, exceeds that of the robots. And they become the next generation, and they are the next threat. That's your book two. is an escalation of that. They can help to defeat this initial threat of the robots. Maybe somehow your protagonist. God, but how does he do that?
I'm very open to the story drastically changing from what I initially had to something cooler. So,
well,
let's make the awesome.
Just putting out there,
the initial was cool.
They ride dinosaurs,
right?
Pterodactyls. Got to have pterodactyls. Yes. just the idea that the cybernetic enhancements actually make these new robots, cybernetic robots, better than the originals and create some sort of schism or friction within the robotic culture that maybe the protagonist and his team can exploit and leverage somehow.
Right.
You know, and then that could be a process as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe their first attempt at you know, brain control or whatever it is they're doing creates a zombie, a brainless person, because they've put in a cybernetic device that, you know, short circuits or just isn't compatible or something like that. And then as the process goes on, they end up refining it potentially too effectively, and it becomes, like Dave was saying, another threat, a genius level something or other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that first one, if that first those first few, if among that first test case where they got it wrong, was somebody that Ron knew, maybe it was Ernie Talon, maybe it's Valerie, who knows? But it didn't take, it didn't work, and maybe they're not a zombie, but maybe they can serve as sort of a bridge, and that they have access to, you know, some of the communication networks and some of the decision making process, because they're part of this collective somehow, flawed, not perfectly, but they can almost serve as like an Oracle of Delphi and help guide the protagonists once they finally decide to do something. You know, maybe they go to that Steve Jobs, that Genesis person, with this broken partial cyborg person, and say, can you help them? Can you heal them? Well, no, I can't, but maybe I can fix what's wrong here and create a hope, a weapon that we didn't have before against the dark forces, because I'm rocking the whole hero's journey thing here. so, you know, finding, working that vibe, that could be a very cool adventure, you know, a plot within a plot. You know, here's stage two. How do we, it's darkest before the dawn. What do we do? Well, let me at least help my love, my girlfriend here. We'll take him to Steve Jobs and have him fix him. You can't call him Steve Jobs, but right. You know, call him.
He may be wearing a black turtleneck. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that, and glasses. Yeah. But have that work, and now there's your turning point, your pivotal moment where things shift and the heroes go on the offensive and actually have a chance.
Now, there's if you decide to do this kind of half-human techno-zombie thing, I can see two different directions to take it.
Okay.
On the one hand, I like that original concept that you very first presented us with, which is that they are not actually zombies. And they are just, whether on purpose or accidentally, they look like zombies, and that's being used to trick humans. And on the other hand, and again, this is cool, but this is going fairly far afield.
Sure.
If maybe this cybernetic zombification thing is a nanotechnology and actually can be transmitted through saliva.
Yes.
So a techno-zombie bites you, and you'll get the nanos in your bloodstream, and it will slowly start rebuilding you. And maybe you'll just start to get this insatiable hunger for minerals. And it uses those to literally convert portions of your brain into computer technology.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And there's no big, huge mass of all this money needed to create the robots. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. Exactly. Awesome. And then you can still have that cool first line because, you know, his weird zombie neighbor actually has literally been partially converted into a machine. And so when shot in the head, cybernetics spill out and he freaks out and doesn't know what's going on. Now, if you decide to go that route, what you do have, though, is a legitimate zombie apocalypse, which is not what you initially presented us with.
Which is still very freaking cool, though.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Now, another kind of wrench to throw in. If those are spawned from the first sort of failed attempt, then the few broken first ones, I would say, need to break away from the rest of, so that you have two different robot factions.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That then are almost at odds with one another. So you've got one that has no problem replicating itself at the cost of humans. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the other one whose original intention was to protect the humans, tried to create this one, and now they have a reason to protect the humans. And then they can go, you know, they can have that other sequence later where they go, well, the only way to really protect them is to just destroy them all. And that's the only way to keep these other robots from replicating and then taking over our place.
Now, one challenge to that, that's very cool, but the challenge to that then, Dan, is you're going to have a multi-POV story. Are you cool with that?
Right.
I would love that. I really want to. I have been writing a lot of first person, and I've written one novel that's just like that, but yeah, I really want to challenge myself with a good romantic story and good hero's journey arc, and that'd be great. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I wanted to talk about that. Let's switch gears for a minute and put aside the zombies and all of that plot and talk about the romance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's very important, I think, when you're start working on a romantic plot that the love interest exists for some reason other than being a love interest.
Okay.
And so I want to sit down and let's talk about this girl. I can't remember what you said her name was. Victoria?
Valerie.
Veronica?
Valerie Kite.
Valerie. I knew it was a V. and let's we need to really give her a strong personality and a reason to exist so that she's not just the obvious girl, but she is an important, vital part of the story who happens to also be involved with the romantic plot. So what who is she? Where does she come from? What does she contribute to this?
Well, I really just thought of her a couple days ago, but, you know, I just thought in the whole scenario where they're in the jail that maybe for some reason she's shut down and John Cleaver, the hero, you know, has to rise to the occasion to not just win her over, but convince her that, you know, life is worth living. You know, yes, this terrible thing happened to you, but now I'm thinking maybe she escaped from this thing with cybernetics in her, and maybe she just thinks that she is like an evil being now and should be killed, but maybe somehow she ends up kind of being the key to them turning the corner in the fight.
That's a very cool idea. I think that you're right. You know, your initial idea of having her be this kind of person who's shut down is cool. But as you're talking now and kind of leaning away from that, I think that is that's a good thing to do, because it's very hard to have a character shut down like that emotionally and still feel like they're contributing. And then piling on top of that the fact that they're the love interest seems very difficult to do. Yeah.
It's low energy, too. There's not a lot of conflict and stuff to work with there.
Right.
But talking now about having, you know, maybe having her infected with cybernetics, I think it could be cool. Maybe she is the first person of this second generation of the cyborgs. And so, you know, she's bitten and she thinks, well, I'm done now. I'm a zombie. I'm whatever. You know, depending on how you work it out, who knows what. But she could get bitten, and everyone assumes she's going to turn feral or whatever, and then she doesn't. And they're very confused, and, well, what's different about you? And they figure out, oh, there's a 2.0 of this technology that is doing something different to you. You know, it's more advanced than it used to be, which then suggests, of course, well, you know, there's somebody behind this who's still programming them. This is on purpose. It's not accidental. You know, all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's got legs. And you know, one thing just to sort of ease the connection and the spark between them, you know, you're saying that Ron lives with his parents and, you know, maybe his father has some sort of illness, cancer or something, and he's given up. You know, he's just waiting to die, and that gets Ron down. That burns at Ron, and he wishes his father, or maybe it's his mother, I don't know, Freudian, who knows. But regardless, have somebody in his life who has given up. Yeah. And, you know, if whether he has even a passing relationship, I mean, maybe Valerie comes by his place all the time and gets gas. And they have this kind of, you know, very, very, very platonic, hi, good morning, have a cup of coffee, blah, blah, and move on. Right. And then she's infected and she's given up. That gives him a spark to, you know, maybe this is the first point where he starts to turn and says, no, 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 this is not how this is going to be. Right. You do not give up. And that would get her attention on him, and maybe there's more to him than she thought, and it can start to sort of grease the wheels for the relationship evolving from there.
Yeah, and that's really important, because one of my concerns with this was your protagonist to begin with, and I don't see what's driving him to do much of anything other than how things around him are affecting him.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And then, like, in your original, he was taken to the prison. He meets Ernie. Ernie, you know, hates the robots and kind of goes into, we got to get out of here and everything. And so he was kind of along for the ride.
Right.
And so I want to see more of why is he the main character? What is it about him that is important for us to follow him as opposed to anybody else?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Right. Yeah, he needs to be driven and not by external forces.
Right. Any thoughts on that, Dan?
Well, I like the character arc that Brian talked about earlier, of the guy who's kind of shiftless and directionless and is forced to step up and take control. Mm-hmm. And that kind of very Cassandra complex thing of, I know what's going on. I know that these are robots. Why won't any of you believe me? I know that this prison is actually a trap and they're all trying to kill us. Why won't any of you believe me? That's a good way of sparking that kind of activity.
Yeah.
And that kind of character arc seems especially good for a zombie story, especially one like we've talked about where they're just kind of turning your neighbors into automatons kind of thing. Because really what that technology is doing on a thematic level is it is turning everyone else into him. You know, it's removing your drive. It's removing your risk taking. It's removing, you know, all of those crazy things that make us human and just kind of turning you into couch potatoes that are taking up space.
Turning you into Ron Stamps.
You go to work, you come home, don't do anything.
Yeah. The gold is glimmering and it hurts my eyes.
Right, right.
That's
so yeah,
fabulous.
He kind of sees what's happening to his world and says, you know, it should be more interesting than this. It should be more exciting. People should be better, and then realizes, you know what? That's exactly who I am. I need to step up and be better.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that That's revelation cool. comes along. First, it's I've got to stop this and get everything back to normal. You know, that's the first impulse of a couch potato is, oh, crap, I've got to do some work now to try and get everything back the way it was. Mm-hmm. And that's a good first impetus, you know, and he's still kind of grouching and the couch potato-y guy that he was. But now at least he's armed with some knowledge and he's going to do something and it doesn't work and it doesn't work. And then, yeah, exactly what Dan's describing, that cathartic moment when, holy crap, you know, especially if a zombie, oh my God, what if you know, one of his best friends is a zombie and he doesn't notice.
Right. Well, okay. I got to jump in here.
Very Shaun of the Dead, right?
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this whole time I'm thinking, and you can, this is one of those things you can totally throw out, but I think Ernie has to be one of them.
Sure.
You know, he hates them, but I think he has to be one of them. And that's a revelation later on. But one, Dave, what Dave had been saying about, oh shit! What was it? Oh, I think everybody kind of jumped in on this. The girl, Valerie, and being like the next, like the 2.0 or whatever. Mm-hmm. One of your solutions might be that if her blood or saliva or whatever is introduced to one of the others, then it combats it.
Hmm.
So she's like,
you know what I mean? Almost she's like repairs it.
She's a virus.
Right. But a virus that works against
right.
the one that's sort of zombifying everybody.
Yeah, maybe she has that one rare blood type they didn't think they'd have to worry about.
And it mutates.
Hardly anyone has yeah. it.
Right.
Now, that's awesome, but she becomes then the protagonist.
Well, no, because what if that's the whole purpose for their romance, is that she gives it to him.
Oh, she infects him.
Yeah, she infects him, and then maybe something happens to her, she's killed or whatever, and then he's the only thing that can cure the whole rest of the world by going around and biting
her. I kind of like that. There was Dan Simmons wrote a very cool series of books, The Hyperion Cantos, and I'm going to totally spoil it. No, I'm not even going to go there. But the cool idea that she's almost like, it's like the blood of Christ, and I don't want to go that far, but you know, her infection, I'm totally going way, way off the grid here. but there's a metaphor there that's very cool, where her kiss infects him and right. gives him strength. And maybe it's her last kiss. Maybe the genetics, the cybernetics are breaking down in her body and she's dying and she's willing to die with it. But he says, no, you can't die. Give it to me. I'll take it for a while. And you know, something along those lines. And so there's a sacrifice there that yeah. he's willing to make for her.
Well, another way you can do it is if he gets infected with the original one and is going to turn into one of these things, now you have a ticking clock, mm-hmm. and he has to find a cure for himself. And if she's the cure, he doesn't know that, but, you know, somehow...
But if she's dying and she gives it to him, then we've already got mm-hmm. the ticking clock. If the infection that she has is killing her, and then right. she gives it to him. Boom, there's your ticking clock right there. We right, already have it established.
But if he's going to die with it, then he's no longer the cure.
But then he takes the poison, the virus, the whatever it is, and goes into the heart of the problem, and at that heart he discovers the cure, whatever it is that can reverse it. You know, he's going in planning on making a sacrifice. Or no, they know there's a cure in the central processor somewhere. You know,
so she's no longer the cure.
Right. Well, she is, but she's dying. She's dying, right?
Something unrelated.
Right.
Yeah, whatever. You know, the virus is killing her. He sacrifices, says, give it to me. Yes, she is the poison, but she's too weak. She's had it too long. She's dying.
So she gives it to him.
He's strong now. He can use it, go to the core, and get the cure. And whatever. There's something in there. Huh?
And create 3.0?
Whatever. Yeah, sure. Exactly. Why not? There's something in there for you, Dan.
If nothing else,
Art Man,
you can dissect everything that we just
riffs
on,
absolutely.
And there's something to play with.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Or you can throw it all out, you know, because it's your story.
Yep.
Stepping back from the plot a little, talking about Valerie and mm-hmm. and the kind of character arc that we theorized for our main character, it seems like a good thing for Valerie would be to be a very active person, to be a very, you know, troublemaker person, a risk-taking, crazy person, so to speak.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
because then that she is someone who can initially force him out of his comfort zone.
Right.
Here, we're stuck in this prison together. Have you ever been on the roof? Let's go up to the roof. You know, that kind of stuff. Let's try stuff. Let's go places we're not allowed to go. Let's do things that we're not allowed to do and kind of introduce him to this rebellious nature that he's eventually going to have to develop for himself.
Totally.
Yeah.
Get him out of his comfort zone.
I like that.
I like that.
Yeah, continuously. That's awesome. I like that a lot.
That is fabulous. Gentlemen, I'm watching the clock tick here, so I'd like to at least start taking it home here and maybe offer up some final thoughts or considerations for Art Man to take with him as he goes off to create this awesome epic zombie robot book that has never been done before. Dan, do you have any final words of advice or final suggestions or ideas to toss out?
Yeah, I think the thing that you need to make sure to do if you're planning this for a trilogy is, you know, figure out how you want that trilogy to end, whether it's let's cure all the diseases completely or let's create a new transhuman species or whatever it is. Figure out what your end game is at the end of the series. Okay. And then give the first book a problem that you can present and solve in a single book so that it still feels conclusive and satisfying.
Right.
You know, you've still blown up the Death Star, you just haven't defeated the Empire yet. You know what I mean?
Awesome. Yes, gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
Like that.
Thank you.
Brian?
Oh, boy. The only advice that I have at this point is there are definitely some things about this that you were really excited about when you were telling us about it, and mm-hmm. that I was really excited about. And so don't let it become too obscured don't get overwhelmed by all of the shit that we just threw at you.
Right.
And hold on to those things that you were the most excited about,
because mm-hmm.
otherwise you may lose motivation or you may get lost. And do the things that make you happy when you're writing this. Like you were talking, you talked a lot about the escape plan, and mm-hmm. I have written down much of this as an escape plan to get away from a robot uprising. And if you were really motivated to write that escape plan and to write all the scenes with that, keep mm-hmm. that in there, because that's, that's going to be your motivating factor and it's going to keep you rolling. But okay. I think there are so many ways that you can go with this and so many things that you can do.
Yeah.
I just, I'm thrilled beyond belief, and really excited to read it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'm excited.
and for sure. Dan, reiterating what has definitely already been said, that you're obviously passionate about this. And I think that through the course of the conversation, while we've layered, as Brian said, a lot of stuff on you, mm-hmm. I think ultimately we've kind of reinforced that original excitement, and found a way for it to be a zombie robot book.
Right.
And,
yeah.
and still tie in with everything that was very cool about that, which I love that about this process. Right. One thing, I totally agree with Dan, to find your end game, mm-hmm. and work towards that through the series. And I'm also going to direct you towards the Genesis point. Once you have that end game, mm-hmm. I'm very fixated on what it was that made these things sentient, how right. they got there. Whether it was a Steve Jobs guy, whether it was spontaneous, whether it was a series of events that contributed to that. Having the starting point be relevant and important, mm-hmm. I think makes the arc stronger. If somebody can go back to the point of beginning and say, ah. There's the beginning, and therein lies the key to our salvation, maybe. I don't know. Something along mm-hmm. those lines.
Yeah.
And one other thought that just occurred to me, the idea of a central processing network being outside of the city where this takes place, maybe mm-hmm. in some military installation, but the first instances of the zombie outbreak happened here, maybe at a research facility at a university or something, and that's where mm-hmm. it started. So in order to contain this blunder, this error that the AI has initiated, it perpetuates the zombie scare, and that whole town gets surrounded by the military, which is already being largely run by robots anyway. So you've got a closed bubble as well. The heroes can't go outside
mm-hmm.
for their salvation either, because the military is there going to shoot anybody that gets close to the perimeter until they have right. a handle on things.
This is crazy. Let's lock down a perimeter. No one gets out.
Exactly.
Right.
And that leaves your primary AI, and maybe it's not the primary, maybe it's just the secondary, but outside of that zone and free to lay the foundations for book two, if that's where you're going, something along mm-hmm. those lines. So, but I am totally down with this. Now, Dan, in speaking with you earlier, we came up with something, and dear friends, we're changing the format of the round table slightly at this point.
Yes.
We used to say that when you publish this thing and it becomes glorious, that you come back and let us know. No, what happens now is when you publish this story, you will be anointed as a knight of the round table.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. And this is, we're grandfathering this in. So any of you yep. guest writers who have been on any of these 23 episodes, when your story gets written, you let us know, and we will make you a knight of the Round Table. There's a carrot for you, by
God. We may even have to kind of Photoshop on armor and stuff.
Oh, hell yeah. Ooh. Oh,
we'll play with it, yeah.
Hey, you know, I know a graphic artist. I know a digital artist who might be able to do that.
Yeah.
Damn the art
man. That would be easy to do. And I challenge every other guest writer to take up the gauntlet and become a Knight of the Round Table. I plan on being the first one.
Ha ha! Well done, sir. Well done.
Excellent.
Oh, gentlemen, excellent, excellent work this evening. This has been classic Round Table goodness. A huge thank you to Dan Wells. Dan, you infused so much and raised the discussion to so many wonderful different levels. We really appreciate you coming out and helping us workshop this story.
Yeah.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And Art Man, I know it takes a lot of guts to put your baby up on the table for everybody to poke at, so much respect for your courage, and we really appreciate you putting your story out there and giving us a great hour of good times.
Hey, thank you guys so much. Like I said, I'm honored, and this was a lot of fun, and I'm going to listen to this several times and take copious notes and come up with something that I think rocks and then write it out.
Outstanding.
Excellent.
Outstanding. We couldn't ask for anything more.
That's right.
So, wow, Brian. This is literary gold achieved, or at least scattered nuggets.
This ranks up it as one of my favorites, most definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And dear friends, as long as we're thanking people, thank you for hitting that play button. And for your notes, we've been getting comments on the website, comments on the different posts. People are continuing the discussion out there. A shout to Peter Ellis. Dude, you have been rocking on the comments. We thank you. Everybody, Justin McCumber, all the folks who have been, Christopher Wright, who have been adding comments, we appreciate that. Please keep that going, because that's just awesome, and it continues the discussion. A review is always welcome out on iTunes. Comments on the website. Shoot us a line at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. And just dive in, man. The creative process is not limited to one podcast, and everybody has this in them, and we're only too happy to help perpetuate that.
Definitely.
Wow. Brian, closing thoughts?
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, okay, I normally I just say my two words, but real, real fast, because this came up to Dan the Art Man.
Yes?
Villain motivation, like your robots, even though they're robots, if their motivation is always to make things right or to make things better, even though they don't know that they're turning the whole place to crap, it's a nice, strong motivation for a villain. So just as a last thought. But
they're the good guy of their own story.
That's right.
Awesome. And then we, that makes it harder for us to condemn them, even though we know that they're doing horrible things. So other than that, take that and go right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I shall.
Very cool. Friends, stay tuned. In a few days, we will start this process all over again. More authors, more guest writers, more awesome workshopping and creative mojo.
Ooh, baby.
Until then, you find what you're looking for, so look for wow. Look for, oh my God, that's amazing, because I'm guaranteed if you look for it, you will find it. We'll see you guys in a couple of days. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com. Or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is @writerspodcast. Or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.